Hello, insiders, and a very pleasant good afternoon to you. Wherever you may be, this is your host, Bruce Ash, coming to you live from the mothership of the Bustos Media juggernaut in the Perfection Auto Works Studios, welcoming you to an action-packed pre-Thanksgiving edition of Inside Track. We have a fun and interesting show for you today. In just a couple of minutes, we take a trip in the Wayback Machine, talking with the hosts of a great podcast here in Southern Arizona. Actually, it's all over the world. And that would be Voices of the West. And that podcast with Bunker and with Harry started right here on this show at KAVY many years ago. Harry Alexander and Bunker DeFrance join us. In the second hour, friend of the show, Dr. Donald Critchlow joins us to discuss his new report on the reckless way that American history is being taught in schools today. And closing out the show is veteran Arizona State Representative Gail Griffin. The topic is the current debate over water policy in our state. Before we hear from our special guests from Voices of the West, I want to do a quick shout out to our great Inside Track supporters, my co-host Eb Wilkinson from Wilkinson Wealth Management. Eb helps gun owners comfortably retire and retire comfortably. Call him at 777-1911. Eric Rudin at Essential Pest. He'll keep your home or business safe from pets, vermin, termites, and weeds. Call Eric's great team at 886-3029. Jamie and Craig at Tucson Iron and Metal Retail. You'll be amazed at all the great steel and metal products they offer. Call them Monday. I wish I would have written the phone number in my copy here. Anyway, you all know the number. Call them. And our newest sponsor, Mike Embry at Perfection Auto Works, where he and his great team make autos great again. Call Mike to make an appointment anytime. Em and I support each of these locally owned, family-run businesses. So should you. As always, we're thankful for producer Tom running the board. He actually is the responsible professional person running the show today as opposed to the host. He'll be taking your relevant calls for our guests today at 790-2040. Okay, now on with the show. Many of you will recall the founder of the show, Emil Franzi, was a great supporter of the culture and history of the American West. In fact, so much that for the last several years he hosted Inside Track. The third hour of the show was devoted to his real passion, which gave birth to Voices of the West. Joining us this afternoon are the successors to what Emil created, and they have kept the flame alive with their podcast every Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock p.m., celebrating the Old West as well as the New West. And if I can speculate for a moment, the boss, the aforementioned Emil Franzi, I think is looking down, or maybe up, at their podcast with a broad smile. The voices of the West, Harry Alexander, and Bunker DeFrance join us here in studio. Thanks for coming in today, gents.
Our pleasure. Thank you for the invite.
Thank you so much, and I love that sound effects of the, the action. Can you do a spinning cylinder?
I don't think so. The tongue doesn't move in that direction exactly. Harry, you were Franzi's producer for many years around when Voices started here at KVY. What are your recollections on the inspiration, why Emil really gravitated to being so in love with Voices of the West?
He was a student of Western history, plain and simple. He absolutely loved the West, and I remember him telling a story that he was in California. He and his wife were in California, and the High Chaparral came on the television, and he turned to Kathy and said, "We're moving there."
Yeah, because he had gone to school here, but he left here, right?
Yeah.
So where was he in California?
He was in California. He grew up in Glendale.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing while he was in California, he was doing what he did in politics.
Yeah, political organizing. Mm-hmm. He was one of the and fixing elections and what have you. Yeah.
And God, we need him now.
Yeah, we do.
But
it's not a coincidence that we have literally won no elections here since he passed.
It's funny, but if you think about it, Harry, you're talking about fixing elections. In the veterinary sense, we need to fix some politicians.
There you go.
Yeah, like with the scissors or the clamps.
Yes. Pretty much. But the important thing, Bruce, you mentioned myself and Bunker. We have another guy, Todd Roberts, in Los Angeles. it's interesting that it takes three of us to do this program.
To do one job.
What one guy did all the years that he did it.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know, Franzi would walk in here literally with some scribbles.
Yes, he would.
For inside track,
uh-huh.
Right? And I'm not speaking ill of someone who's gone. He didn't care as much about public policy and all that
mm-hmm.
for the last few years. I mean, he was still
into
a political at heart,
yeah,
but
yeah.
It wasn't really his passion.
No.
But when it came to Voice of the West, he came prepared.
Oh,
that
yeah.
That
every
he
show.
Did. That he did. And he'd all, bring in a bunch of CDs, and that was my signal.
Number
when I was,
three.
Yeah, that was my signal when I was producing.
Damn it!
That,
damn it, Harry!
I know,
can't you
yeah.
get the damn
CD player to work? You know, yeah. So, I would always ask him, Abel, give me some heads up and I can really make it sound good. Oh, no, you're doing a great job. And so that's how it was in the, four or five years.
So do you have any PTSD episodes as a result of getting yelled at and
I have this,
physically manhandled sometimes?
I have this twitch whenever I get into this radio station.
When you hear Tiger.
No, I haven't been back. Here at KVOI since I retired from radio, and it's changed a lot.
Hey, look at all the improvements.
So where our producer Tom is.
Tom,
that's where our studio was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, this was the office.
This was Mary Martin's office.
Yeah. No, this was production.
Oh no,
studio.
This is Prod Room. This yeah. is Jerry Cross's. That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah. And so, but yeah, I mean, it looks great. It
yeah.
looks great.
Yeah, though they've done a good job and lots of new radio activity here.
Radioactivity? You mean we're going to glow when we leave?
We might.
We always do.
We might. You never know.
Glow with success, yeah.
I can tell you that the parking hasn't improved out back there.
No, they haven't touched that parking lot, and I think
it's
some of the
worse.
Same bums are out there, too.
It's gotten worse. They actually lost two parking spots.
Yeah.
That's true.
And I managed to run into a bollard out there while I was trying to inch my truck in.
Oh, okay.
The bollard is still standing with no damage to the truck. So
contact Bustos Media.
We're good with that, yeah.
Contact Bustos Media for any loss.
Just contact parking.
So we're good.
So Franzi's dad, if I recall, ran a movie house in Glendale, California.
Yes, he did.
So do you think part of his affinity with the Old West might have come from being a kid who had unlimited admission
absolutely.
To watch Westerns?
No doubt in my mind.
Absolutely.
No doubt. And he knew so, not personally knowing those actors and actresses, but he knew of them. And The man was a walking encyclopedia when it came to the West.
You know, he had one advantage over us, you know, because I would go to the Saturday matinees. With his dad owning the theater, he could go any time of the week
right.
and watch it over and
right.
over and
yeah,
over.
Yeah,
and which
yeah.
I
and he got free
he
popcorn as well.
Which,
oh, yeah, Coke, popcorn, and jujubes.
Right. The whole shoot match.
Yeah, yeah. Man, jujubes.
I miss jujubes.
You know what's great about jujubes is you'd sit in the, when you had if you had jujubes, you'd sit in the back.
Yeah.
And you throw them.
Yeah.
Bing!
Yeah.
Off the back
from,
of the head.
From the balcony?
Oh, yeah. Well, we didn't have a balcony where I went.
At the Fox Theater, the balcony was open when I used to go down there. And, yeah, you could take and toss them off the balcony.
Those were the days.
Yeah.
Those were the days. So I remember Franzi telling stories about when he was at the U of A during rodeo week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, nobody else in America celebrates rodeo week
nope.
the way we do or... Well, it's still a weak attempt here now.
Well, if you go up north, they outdo us. You go
really?
To Pendleton.
Oh, really?
Or Calgary. That's like a whole week. And they have chuck wagon races. They have events that they don't have in other rodeos. And then they also, a lot of times when that's going on, they'll have an Indian rodeo going on at the same time, a ranch rodeo going on, and... It's like a whole. It's like watching an old Buck Jones movie where the guys are racing the wagons around.
Mm-hmm.
It's still exactly like that.
So Franzi would tell stories about showing up at camp at classes at the U of A, wearing his cowboy boots, his hat, a leather vest, jeans, cowboy shirt, and wearing six guns.
Yep.
not Roy Rogers.
Real ones. Real ones.
Real ones.
Yep.
And nobody ever said a word. Can you imagine the sirens that would go off today?
They shut down the campus.
Bunker and I often talk about how back in when I remember in high school, guys would have gun racks in the back of their trucks, and there'd be a variety of
rifle rack.
Yeah, sitting on the racks there, and nobody bothered them whatsoever.
They still do in Texas. I was there this week in San Antonio. All right. They still have those racks.
Thank you. That's good.
A couple of weeks ago, we had a guy on the show from Oklahoma. It's the largest gun collection in the U.S., and it's a museum. Mm-hmm. And while I was looking this stuff up, there was a quote in there about this one guy. He said, you know, there was a time when every kid in America, well, not every kid, but most kids in America, especially in the West, their dads took them out. They bought them a 22 or so, taught them how to shoot and everything. And he said, and think about this. All these kids running around with 22s, not one of them ever shot up to school.
I know. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But I got my gun training through Boy Scouts and through the NRA, and then further training in the military.
So I was never in the service. I had a grandfather who had a, and I don't recall the model number, but he had a Marlin long rifle, and he had a Savage long rifle. And we would do Christmas at their house, and we would eat dinner nice and early. It was like a 1 o'clock meal, right? And they live way, way out of the West Side. We would go out to the Tooleys, okay? And he had a place that he would go shooting. There was kind of a little wash that we would shoot across. Mm-hmm. He'd bring his old beer cans, because he was a drunk. He had lots of them. And
we go out, them up for you kids.
And we that's right. And actually, I think he also, I think, kept a bottle in the bathroom. Okay.
Oh, just to keep it floating.
And he would you know, go back in there for nips during dinner. But so Lord only knows how we ever got there, how we ever shot straight, and how we didn't get killed. But that he was the guy who taught us first how to shoot, myself and my two sisters. And in those days, again, you know, it's not just today. NRA was doing those kind of trainings.
Yeah.
We spent a summer up in Sholo.
Yeah.
And we went to I think it was called McClintock High School up there. I think that was the name of it. Mm-hmm. And we did our shooting with an NRA safety course. I mean, those kinds of lessons, right? So, I mean,
well, you know, and some of the high schools in town used to have shooting
Catalina
ranges.
Catalina High School, they had in the basement. A lower level shooting range.
And Rincon High School, Palo Verde had one.
I think the university had a shooting team at one time.
They did.
Yeah.
And they Polo.
Those things don't exist anymore because of...
And that's America's loss. It really is.
Yeah, it is.
Well, look, this city council, I don't want to get, you know, too political here, but this city council would do anything in order to sort of shove that down, you know, so that, you know, they want to be this new town. We're the old Pueblo, no matter what these communists have
but
to say.
But you see, you have to acknowledge the past.
Right.
It's a must. You must acknowledge the past. And maybe it's not a good past. Maybe it's a good one or a bad one. But you still have to acknowledge it. And that is the problem with the politicians of today. They don't want to acknowledge what was.
Right.
And
you can't understand what is until you know what was.
Thank you.
Here's a Bunker quote for you.
Yeah.
No past, no future.
No future. Yeah. You're right.
Because, you know, it's. I look at my life as because that's the only reference I can, I see what's happened around me, the history I've seen, history I've studied.
And you've lived and been part of history.
I'm a pre-war baby.
Yeah.
You know, I'm proud of that. You know, my folks came right out of the Depression. I grew up with the value, you don't buy something you can't pay for. Otherwise, every vehicle I've ever
bought. Do you remember layaway?
We never bought layaway.
Really?
No, we pay, if my folks needed a new icebox,
that's
back in the icebox days.
Right.
They, when they had enough cash, they bought the icebox. They didn't buy it on time and make payments. And you know, that's one of the things, like they go, well, those teachers aren't paid enough. Well, if the teachers didn't have all the electronic goodies and crap in their house, you know, all the bells and whistles and all the new stuff. I can remember when I was going to school, every year when we'd start this new school year, all the school teachers would be telling us about their trips to Europe. Now, how could a school teacher back then afford a trip to Europe on their salary.
They get their $7,000 a year.
Now, when they're making, you know, I don't know.
So Franzi also had that link to the past. Part of that was his work with Empire Ranch.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So how, Harry, you probably, and Bunker, you also, you probably know more how he fell into that or became interested in that.
I'm not sure how he fell into that. Do you, Bunker?
Well,
he got me into it.
he got interested because he got some material about the, I think it was the one of the first roundups that they, that's what they called it, the big gathering. And I think he went to it, that's not 100% clear, but he liked what he saw, and, you know, and he's the kind of guy, he gets involved. So, because when I went on the board, he was on there, and I loved him because he upset people.
Do you think?
Oh, man, it was, and, you know, and we were like, you know, because we're partners with the BLM.
Right.
So, you know, in the BLM, in the cowboy world, for a lot of ranchers, that's a dirty word.
Right.
Some of them, they're friends. You know, with the foundation, we work with them, we get along with them, and that's important. But he could be a thorn in their side because they'd say something, and he'd start quoting government things, you know, and they'd go, well, and they didn't even know. He's quoting stuff that they should know, and they
didn't. Well, he usually did his reading came prepared.
Yes, he did.
You know,
it was just phenomenal.
So that link to the past, you know, the Vail family, the Boyce family, I mean, all of these people who are so big in ranching for a century almost.
Yeah. Well, more than that. 1876 is when
150
the Boyces bought the ranch from Fish, and it was just 600 acres.
You're right. I forgot there was Fish before there was.
And he built the original Sagung. It was four rooms in 1870. And there's another house they call the Grove House, which is further up. And there's controversy on whether that was pre-existing or post the other house. But he understood the history. And he knew the history, you know, of the...
Appreciated as well the history.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, and the thing is, like, you know, we talk about it all the time on the show, but history is so important. And to ignore it or try to bury it or try to change it or say it's not correct or improper is wrong, because that's what you learn from. If you've got a statue you don't like, don't tear it down.
Don't look at it.
Put another plank next to that one explaining the controversy. Not saying this is what you've got to believe, but this is what they say and this is what some of the facts say. You make up your mind.
They're very proud. They just melted down the last Lee statue with him on a horse.
They changed the names of military installations. I was stationed at Fort Bragg.
That's right.
And I don't know what they call it now, but I will always call it Fort Bragg because that's what I know. And yes, Braxton Bragg was a great Confederate general. No
and
question
now they
about
call it. Fort Pink Pody. A petticoat, that's what they call it now.
So, Bunker, we met the first time I ever met you was here at KVY. We met every Saturday afternoon when you came in for hour number three. How did you get involved in the show?
Well, I was on the board down at the ranch.
Through the ranch.
And I actually, it's funny because I had been listening to the show, and I got down there, and of course, then I met Emil personally. He found out that I had been a stuntman for 30 years in the Westerns, and I guess that got him interested, because one day we were finishing up a board meeting down there, and he says, "What are you doing next Saturday?" And I said, "Well, I haven't got any plans." He says, "I want you to come in and be my guest." So I came in, and we did the show, and about 3 weeks later, he said, "Why don't you come in again?" So I came in, and then
he was good at kind of sucking people in that way.
And it was so funny because, you know, I was like every week,
right?
And I've been doing it about 2 months.
Yeah,
and we booked Don Collier in, right?
Right.
And so we're sitting there, Emil's there, I'm here, and Collier hasn't come in yet. And he looks over and he says, "Well, Tegger," he says, "you handle this one." And he said, "I'm just going to sit back." And he did. He was like, you know, it's like both feet in the pond up over your head. But it was really, you know, he knew how to teach you. You know, he didn't teach you by telling you. He taught you. He's like John Ford. He puts you in the situation and trust you and your instincts.
Well, look, let's take a quick break. We'll hear from some of our great sponsors. For all of you that are out there, no channel flipping. Don't press any buttons.
No.
We'll be right back here with Bunker and with Harry. We're talking about the Empire Ranch. We're talking about Voice of the West and our pal, the boss, Emil Franzi.
Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up with science.
You mean you don't use a shoe?
No, we use the latest in technology and innovation to eliminate bugs, termites, weeds, and more.
No spray cans and lighters?
None of that. Only solutions that target insect biology, using chemistry to help protect the environment, people, and their pets.
Huh. Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up. Call 886-3029 or visit EssentialPest.com.
We take you to winter 1776.
Message for General Washington.
Yes, Captain.
Oh, hello, sir. Colonel Lee says the Redcoats are encamped just across the river at Trenton, sir.
We need to get the boats down to the Delaware, but the wagons are too noisy. What to do?
Begging the General's pardon, sir, Eustace Emery III. And I can lube those wagon axles so they don't squeak, sir.
Do it, Sergeant Emery.
And so, Washington's army crossed the Delaware.
We can grease your modern car truck axles, change the oil, charge the air conditioning, and do brakes, belts, and hoses on all brands, foreign and domestic. If you want a mechanic that cares about your car and your Thanksgiving, call 323-8650. That's 323-8650 and PerfectionAutoWorks.com.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. When people turn 50, something miraculous happens. They start to get serious about retirement planning. They've done very well so far and want to be certain they power into the retirement they've earned. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
Welcome back to Inside Track. We are here with Harry Alexander and Bunker de France. They have a great podcast. If you haven't listened to it at all before, or if you haven't listened in a while, just give us, how do people find out? How do they get on to Voices of the West to listen to your show?
Go to the website, voicesofthewest.net, and that's voicesofthewest.net. There's a radio player on the website. We stream the show live at 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock is when Voices of the West
Mountain
was on.
Standard time.
Mountain Arizona Standard Territory time.
That's right. We don't mess with that nonsense. And the show was on at 4 o'clock. We decided to keep it at 4 o'clock because it's familiar.
Yeah.
And so the show streams live at 4 p.m. The podcasts are available like 30 minutes after at all the usual places: Spotify, Amazon Music, Spreaker, Google. I have
idea.
But it's all over.
At least a half a dozen.
Yeah. So I remember when the show was done here at KVY, Franzi had people who called in from Wales,
from all over the place. We had a guest.
Crazy.
Yeah, we had a guest from Wales. He was a Western writer. That was a great interview. I still have that interview.
And you have you still have a number of those recordings, don't you?
I have all of the programs from 2010 or 2011 on.
Of Voices or Inside Track,
I have Inside Tracks, and I have Voices of the West. I even have Joe Dreyfus's.
That was around 2013, wasn't it?
Yeah, I have Joe Dreyfus's The Visit programs.
Oh yeah.
Let's take a little bit of a side trip, Joe.
Before we go any further, I want to make a presentation.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
This is great, unestimable value. It is a genuine wooden nickel, and it says on here, the culture of the Old West, VoicesOfTheWest.net. It's also a reminder of the show.
Good
publicity
piece. On the
other side is a picture of a buffalo, wooden nickel, United States of America. With great honor and pride, we present it to you.
And yeah. I accept it with great honor and with great acceptance. Thank you. It's going on my dresser top when I get home. Thank
Put
you.
Put it right next to your computer where you can always remember to tune in.
That's VoicesOfTheWest.net.
At 4 o'clock every Saturday afternoon.
That's right.
So, Harry, your grandfather, I understand, served at Fort Huachuca during the Indian Wars, didn't he?
Great-grandfather.
Great-grandfather.
Yes, he was at Fort Huachuca, B Troop, 4th U.S. Cav, and that's the group that took Geronimo into custody after Geronimo's surrender. My great-granddad was also one of the guards on the train that took Geronimo from Fort Bowie. He rode as far as El Paso, and Geronimo was going on to Florida from there. But
a through ticket.
Yeah, he had a through ticket. And and after my great-granddad left the Army, ran into Bat Masterson, they became friends.
Really? Yeah.
In Chicago. They both were newspaper writers, and so they had that thing in common.
Oh, wow. How did I never know that before?
You
haven't listened to the show.
Man of many secrets.
Well, no.
Bat Masterson.
He.
Did he really have a cane and derby hat?
Oh, yeah.
He was a dandy.
Certainly was.
And one of the leading sports authorities of his day.
That's right.
My great-granddad.
A better one than Wyatt Earp.
My great-granddad came over to the United States from what is now the Czech Republic, and the story goes that he was apparently got a girl in trouble. He was studying to be a priest and apparently got a girl in trouble and hightailed out of the country.
That's smart.
And came over to the United States and enlisted in the Army, went into the cavalry. He was a horseman before, did his thing. I have a story, two stories that he wrote while he was out here. Unfortunately, they're in the Czech language, and I don't speak that language. And I've tried to get it translated, but all of those folks who look at it say, I can't understand this. This is old school.
Old Czech.
Okay. But I know one of the stories deals with an Apache, because that word comes up every now and then in the writing.
Whether it's in Czech or English, the word Apache is still Apache.
Yeah. Just a footnote, anybody out there listening that is an expert in old Czech, contact us at Voices of the West, get in touch with Harry,
for sure.
And we'll translate this puppy and get you credit for it.
All right.
Yeah. I'd love to have that published.
He fought in the Indian Wars.
Yep.
Cavalryman.
Yep.
Non-commissioned officer.
That's right.
Sergeant, corporal?
I think he was a private.
That's pretty high rank back then.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I have two pictures of him. No stripe, but I have two pictures of him, both taken at Fort Lowell when the troop was up here. There's no rank on the uniform, but it's the full regalia with the helmet and the plume. It's really cool.
Hmm. Oh, dress uniform.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So cool. we touched just for half a second about Joe Dreyfus.
Mm-hmm.
I had known Joe Dreyfus from the time when he was a hod carrier for a plastering firm back in the late 60s, early 70s. It pops up into my life later on with you guys and elsewhere. You spent lots of time bickering back and forth.
Oh, we had
bickering.
More fun. Yeah.
Teasing. That's what it all was.
That's the cowboy thing. It's, you know, if you like somebody, you tease them. If you don't like them, you're polite. And, you know, it's like, Todd's got to know that I love him because I tease him unmercifully.
Endlessly.
I mean, it's brutal sometimes.
Yep.
But he takes it.
Yeah.
He takes it like a man.
So Todd Roberts, one of your great contributors.
His dad produced both Monty Walsh pictures,
which such great setup.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And I worked on the first.
Just unbelievable. Yeah. And actually, I like the Tom Selleck version of Monty Walsh as well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, it is good. I thought you were going to say better.
I'm not going there.
No. We can't do that.
And I'm a big Selleck fan.
Yeah, I love
Quigley.
He's the John Wayne of the day.
Yeah,
I would love when he quits doing Blue Bud, I'd like for him to get some of the old scripts that Wayne had sitting on his desk when he died and go through them and pick out the best and do them, because he's at that age that, you know, when Wayne was passing on.
Right.
And Wayne had a bunch of projects he wanted to do. I think that'd be awesome.
Yeah. I just don't know that he's doing any work at all right now. I haven't seen him in anything
since. He's doing Blue Bud's a series.
No, no, it's off, that's off the air.
Oh, is it? Oh, I didn't
I think
know
it left the air a year ago.
Hmm. Oh, okay. Well, I don't watch that much TV.
And he's and he is the same guy that he played in Westerns. I mean, Tom Selleck plays Tom Selleck.
Yeah. He's got, you know, the detective thing that he did, that series.
Magnum P.I.
No, not Magnum.
Jesse Stone.
Oh, I love those.
He had, when he was still doing that, he had two Jesse Stone scripts that he wanted to do once he finished the series. Hopefully he'll do them.
Well,
because that
would
was
be
one
great
of my favorite shows.
That was good.
You know, he just, there was that moodiness that he had and that, you know, he always seemed like he was someplace half away, you know, from where he was, the sadness in his life and so on. Just tell you, that's a great series.
You know, it's funny. Victor French, Neil Summers, Bob Totten, and myself, when they had a special screening of Quigley down at MGM before the show opened in public. And we all went down and we saw it, and then there was a little reception afterwards. And we're all sitting around the table talking and having a little sip. And I looked at Totten, because Totten, he directed a ton of Gunsmokes and got really, in fact, he reminds me of Emil. But I looked at him, I said, if he was alive today and the same age as Selleck, who would have played Quigley without even blinking eyes? Is John Wayne.
Mm. Yeah.
Because that, you know, and that stuck with me, because I look at all of the stuff that Selleck has done. It could all have been done by a young John Wayne.
Yeah.
And all of the stuff that Wayne did could have been done by a young Tom Selleck and an older Tom Selleck.
Right. I met John Wayne once here in Tucson at the Tucson Racquet and Swim Club. We swam. I was on the swim team at Catalina High my senior year. We swam at the Racquet Club.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the middle of an afternoon practice, and I see this guy walking across the lawn.
Oh, past the, across the pond.
Well, you know what? He could have walked.
Yes,
he could.
No
kidding. Right? And my friend Alex Cobble and I spotted him, you know, when we finished whatever lap we were doing. And we both jumped out of the pool. We ran soaking wet. Okay? And he was in full regalia, hat to boot to ground, right?
Wow.
Everything. And we shook his hand. His hand,
like a flying pan.
It like went around. The only guy who I've experienced who's had a bigger hand, longer fingers, was Sandy Koufax, the very famous Dodger pitcher,
great,
right?
Great pitcher.
But John Wayne was so nice. Was just a couple of wet teenagers, right?
Yeah.
What a presence he had.
Well, Bunker played poker with him.
No, I didn't play poker with him.
Oh, I thought you did.
I used to play liar's poker all the time, and I wouldn't play it. Because
you sat and watched. That's what it is.
And it was so funny, though, because like when we were doing Real Lobo, they would have what would be a circle. It would be like 20 guys, you know, so you imagine what the bed is getting like, and Jack Elam would be there.
Oh gosh!
And they would go around. Jack would do his bed, and they'd go around. They'd come all the way around back to him, and he would go and quote each guy's quid. 20 guys, their bid up to him, because he was a mathematical. He was an accountant before he became
right
in the movies.
He was a good businessman.
His eyes went bad, but he was just phenomenal. And him and Wayne, they were hoot to be around.
So you were his chewing tobacco.
I told you that story. I got another one that's kind of similar, if you want it.
Please, go ahead.
Okay, you remember at the end of Real Lobo when Wayne and the good guys are all holed up in the cantina, and Mike Henry and the bad guys are holed up in the barn and behind the adobe wall? Well, we're standing around, and we're not doing anything at that particular time. I was one of the bad guys, but they said, bunch of you guys, we need you to come in and stand in for all so many people in this shot. So we're standing there, and we're all chewing, right? Well, when I was inside, I carry one of these styrofoam cups to spit in, right? And some of the guys were spitting in the fireplace. Well, down on the floor was a brand-new Navajo rug.
Ooh.
the property master, these guys, they used to love to do that. They'd go out and buy something so that they could impress the director, you know. And he was that, and he comes, and this guy's like, he's kind of a nervous Nelly anyway. He comes up, he says, guys, be careful, don't spit on the room. Well, Wayne's standing over and he's observing all this stuff. He walks over right into the middle of us, right in the middle of the rug, and he spits down right into it. Like that big wad of black goo. And he looks at the prop guy, and he looks like he's going to have a heart attack, and he says, well, that's all right. I just bought this rug. That's the kind of guy he was.
That's a great
guy.
So your career in TV and motion pictures, Bunker, as a stuntman, covers several years. I listened to you once on one of the Voices shows. There were lots of movies where you actually played one person or one character in the morning, another character in the, like, after lunch, and maybe even another before the end of the day.
Well, my favorite is we were doing a High Chaparral, and we were shooting out at Ryan Field. They wanted to do some stuff with running inserts, because that's where you can put the camera car and run along. And it's already paved, and the side of the runway is all cleared away. So we're up there first thing in the morning. We're out there at 6 o'clock in the morning. But by 8 o'clock, we're ready to shoot. We do the first shot, and we're all ranch hands, and we're supposedly being chased by Comancheros. So we're to ride down this pathway, shooting behind us. We take off. Well, that first shot looked like whack-a-mole, because that area had become a prairie dog town. So what you saw is you saw cowboys popping up in the air, your horses going down. Nobody was hurt. It stomped everything down, so it was safe from then on. So anyhow, but we would make the run down, switch hat, change vest, pull our shirt tails off, and ride back, shooting straight ahead, chasing us. And we did this all morning. Broke for lunch, finished lunch. We changed into cavalry uniforms, and we came to our own rescue.
Did you ever play a woman?
Yes, I did. The dirty rat
here for all the world to know, Bunker to France, crossdresser.
I was not a crossdresser.
No.
I was very cross at having to wear that thing.
I bet you were.
But he was a stuntman.
Jerry Gatlin, the stunt coordinator, and I worked with Jerry a lot. And cowboys, again, like I said, they have this evil, wicked sense of humor. And he just loved, they needed somebody to double one of these gals, because I was young and slim, didn't have the belly.
You look pretty doggone good to me.
Yeah, and anyhow, he would have me double these different gals. I doubled Dina Martin on Young Billy Young in the Stagecoach. I was chasing the Stagecoach, and then I was in the Stagecoach that I was chasing. And then on Good Guys and the Bad Guys, Jackie Joseph, she was an actress. She had a series. I don't know what it was. And she's in the car. You don't see it in the TV cuts, but it's the the Leslie from the Great Race done up as a different car. And it stalls on the tracks, just down the tracks from the station. And she and her husband are like, she's going, we're in the tracks, we're going to get run over. And he's going, no, the station is there, the train stops at the station, we have nothing to worry about. Well, Robert Mitchum and George Kennedy have stolen the train so that David Canary can't steal the train.
Oh, right. God.
And so they come to the station and they keep going. Well, they're not going to wreck that car, and they're not going to wreck the actors. So they had this makeup car. It looked just exactly like it. It had bungee cords on it and everything like that. And the way the Leslie was built, on the right-hand side, there's no door. You have to go in and out to the left. Hmm. And I'm doubling the gal, so she's on the right. And Gary McCarty's the stunt guy, he's driving it. And he's looking, and we're arguing, so he's looking at me. So I got to judge off the train when to get out of there. And also, we got all the gears and stuff there, and I got the dress pulled up around my throat, and we jump out, and it misses us. But when the train hit that car, it went everywhere. The bungee cords never even moved. It hit it so hard and so quick. But, and that was some of the jobs that they paid well, but,
And you still walk upright?
No, I have kind of a list. Not a lisp, but a list.
You look pretty you say you were pre-war vintage.
I'm 83. I was born in August in 1940. Sometimes it seems like Civil War. Yeah.
Just when the Blitz was occurring.
In England. It was getting serious over there, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was, it's, you know, it was, I I look back at my life, and, you know, because I grew up over in Ruidoso, New Mexico, but I would spend time with my dad over here in Arizona because my folks were separated. And sometimes we'd go to California to visit my granddad and stuff like that. Well, that's when I'd load up on television. And that's the early, early days when they didn't have any programs. So everything they ran was both basically 1930s Westerns. And I'd sit there and watch these guys around the clock. Well, years later, I got to thinking, you know, I was watching those Westerns at about the same age my dad was watching them in the theaters.
Yeah.
And I brought, and the funny thing is, because I watched so much 1930s stuff, I brought that sensibilities growing up with me. So in some senses, I was a child of the early days and a child of the middle days.
So let me, we only have about, give or take, 10 minutes left. And I'm
wow.
maybe going off on a you know, down a rabbit hole. I know some of the stuff you guys do on Voice of the West centers around the silent movies,
mm-hmm.
right? And some of the silent movies, you know, Westerns, are some of the best pieces of cinema ever made. Oh,
definitely.
The cameras, you know, they shot cameras where there was no depth of field. It was like you could see a guy a mile away and he would be just as sharp as the guy right standing in front of the camera.
Why is it that anybody born probably after 1965 or 70, and maybe that's an exaggeration, maybe even after 1950, does not appreciate silent films?
Because there's no dialogue. And it forces them to
but
have
there
to
is.
Watch.
But
no,
it, there it's is. In their yeah. eyes and
yes,
their emotions.
Exactly. That, and that's what they don't want is they want the dialogue or the closed captioning. And, you know, they're not wanting to find out what is the story. There's a great serial, Perils of Pauline.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah.
14 chapters. It's all silent. And it is great. It is great.
Yesterday on... Wake Up Tucson.
Yeah.
They, you know, they do the movie thing.
Right.
And we're doing movie scores.
You are great on the movie thing.
And so anyhow, I did my three scores plus one. And then I said, and also they had scores on the silence. And they all went, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I said, yeah, the general, Scott Joplin, did the music. And then another guy did the orchestration. And then there was a guy, I think his name was Gail Davis or something like that. In 1987, he did an LP of silent stuff. And this guy was considered the master of this stuff. And if you can find it, they say it is one of the best. Because
wow.
it's like listening to the big country or stuff like that.
Music did not reach, composed music did not reach into the Western genre film until the mid to late 30s. They would borrow music that
right.
had been in the silence,
right.
and nobody was composing it. And so somebody finally started composing the music, and yeah.
And Franzi was a big fan of Western music.
Oh, yeah.
We have a quick question from Mark. And Mark, I apologize because we're almost at the end of the hour. It's been a great hour with these two galoots. Mark, what's your question or comment for Bunker and Harry?
Yes, this has been a great hour, and I hope you bring them on more often. And
so,
I absolutely cherished, adored, and loved Voices of the West and The Visit, and would not miss that, like I would not miss this radio program as well.
Thank you.
And my question is, well, I have so many questions, what about Jerry Egan? What is going on with him? I haven't heard anything of him.
Jerry Egan.
He was a Vietnam vet, I believe, and Egan.
Do you guys hear?
Egan.
Can you hear?
Yeah,
Mark?
I don't. I'm not recognizing the name.
Bunker's kind of shaking his head.
Okay. Well. All right. Never mind on that one. But yeah.
Well, what was the question? Because maybe we can tap dance around it.
He's asking about Jerry Egan.
He did a lot of research in the for the Old West stuff, and
okay,
and was on with Emil often.
Oh no, and, no, there was. I think there was a Jerry Egan. He was the Apache
talked about the hiding places.
Yeah, I've not heard from Jerry in a long, long time. I know he was ill, And my last communication with him was that he was hoping he was going to get better. And that's the last I heard.
Yeah, because
I think that's the last I heard too. And so anyway, Emil Franzi chewed me out really well one time.
Join the crowd. The line is long.
When I called in, as I would like to do, and to help solve, it was kind of a joking, half-hearted joking kind of a suggestion that we put the Marine Scout snipers along the border in the, you know,
that's
movable
a good idea.
Towers.
Bunker endorses that. I think Harry does too.
Of course.
Yeah, at least scare the crap out of anybody who would want to cross the border illegally. It's long before Donaldus Johannes Trumpum Magnus's wall. But anyway.
I would take my cannon down there if they would pay me in powder.
Right.
Just fire off a warning shot. Wall, that's all you have.
That's it. Fire a warning shot.
Yeah. You know, Harry says he needs a new carriage for his cannon, but I think we could find some volunteer capital.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
if they knew that you're going to be lobbing shells over the border.
I would love
some of them cartel guys. Harry furnished his own parrot.
Yes,
hey,
I have
thanks
my
for
own
your call, Mark, and thanks for listening. Thanks for being such a great caller. Thank you. So fellas, what is the schedule today? What's the agenda for Voices of the West? 4 o'clock on www.voicesofthewest.net.
Correctamundo, and our guest today is Victoria Jackson. Her book is about dying.
Beyond the desert.
It's the cowboys are dying. The art of cowboying is dying, and that's what our topic is all about. And I invite everybody to go to our website. All of our podcasts are listed there, and at Spotify, at all the podcast places you might think of, we are there. And check out our programs, man.
You know, they said that with the coming of the barbed wire and the last of the trail drives, that the day of the cowboy was over, and it wasn't over. There's still cowboys today.
Yeah.
But the cowboying today is so different than what it was then.
Sure.
But there is a last stronghold. That's the buckaroos up there in that area 51 Nevada country. And these guys, they still do it, you know, like they do the trot out in the morning. It's not, you know, they don't do load up the horses and drive 20 miles and then unload and do what they're going to do. They ride that distance.
Yep.
Do it and do their and ride back, and it's just old school.
So the influence of Tombstone, Yellowstone, on popular culture with respect to cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
That's Cowboys and Sopranos. That's what it is.
Yeah. I agree. But is there anything about the men and the couple of women who are characters as cowboys that resonates to our culture?
This is just my take on it from my background.
Yeah.
But I look at these guys, and these guys, most of the guys on there are cowboys,
right?
And they, you know, and they're like subservient, and they're almost like serfs on the ranch. There's not a real cowboy alive that wouldn't walk away from anything he wants to, and spit in your eye and do it. These guys won't, because they're afraid to. Some of them it's out of loyalty. Some of them it's out of fear. But the thing is, and this is what troubles me, is because they all also a reflection of what cowboy today is. They're not all cowboys today. Shake your hand, that's all you need. You got guys today, shake your hand, count your fingers.
Hmm.
I mean, there's some cowboys out there that, you know, I couldn't start in what they can do, but I wouldn't trust them as far as I could spit.
Harry Alexander, Bunker de France. Their podcast is Voices of the West, www.voicesofthewest.net, 4 o'clock today and every Saturday. Tell our listeners one more. I guess I just did. Had a catch of the show. Thanks so much for coming in today. I hope we can get together again soon.
Yes.
Mark wants you. I want you. I think
Well, then, by golly, we'll do
all
it.
All of our listeners. I have like 80 million pages of material I never got to. You got 80 million pages of material you didn't get to.
Harry can tell you, I bring in a stack of stuff like I use maybe 2% out of 100.
We need a big table because he lays out his 3x5 cards there.
We're going to do this, and I can't tell you. I mean, I have fun every week, but this is just the best Saturday I've had, and I think our listeners have had in a long while. Thank you both for coming on the show.
It's been a hoot.
Thank you
very much.
We'll see you on the other side of the news break. Keep listening. No channel flipping.
Customers come first at Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus.
What other kind of customers do you have?
So our biggest customers are actually like ranchers and people from outside of the Tucson area. They're buying a lot of square tubing. They're buying a lot of stuff for their ranch to close off fences.
We'll sell anything from 10 feet to 10,000 feet to somebody that comes in because we have new steel and surplus steel from steel mills. The reason we're able to get such good pricing on some of this stuff is, A, we sell scrap to the mill. So we have a relationship there, and then we can buy material, what they're making, bringing it back. And so we save on freight, and we have relationships for years with them. So I think that's really our niche market. We'll sell whatever you need.
Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus. Call 209-1579. Stop by the yard, 701 East 36th Street. Open Monday through Saturday.
It's fall 1621, and the pilgrims are readying their crops. But in the turkey barn, trouble is brewing.
We cannot stand for this injustice. All turkeys are equal. Just some of us are more equal than others. We shall not end up on a dinner table. We will escape.
Oh no, we must capture those turkeys.
I can fix that, Governor. I'm an auto mechanic.
Eustace Emery, mechanic? Strange no one's invented the automobile yet. Oh well, if you can capture the turkeys, do it. And so Thanksgiving was saved because Eustace Emery invented the Plymouth Arrow and recaptured the turkeys.
Perfection Auto Works, 1046 North Beverly, 323-8650. Or perfectionautoworks.com, 323-8650.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. Some people view market declines as a time to panic. Good news, that's wrong. Markets have never gone down and then failed to come back to create new highs, and this time it's not different. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call Eb Wilkinson at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.